3, 2, 1, hit it.
Chris Ronji, Amy Marks Kors, The Chris and Amy Show.
You know who it is.
Also, if you didn't know, this is called The Show.
Yeah. On 104.1 FM, KMOX.
Good morning, everybody. Brad Young is in for Amy Marks Kors today. I'm Chris Ronji. Welcome into this show. Hope you're having a good day so far. Let us help you improve your day for the next few hours. From 9 to noon, that's when this show happens. Then it is the Gas House Gang today at 12 o'clock. Ollie Marmol. It's Tuesday, so it's Ollie Marmol Day. Ollie will be with us for the first half of the show, at least. Last week, he was on with us about 40 minutes. So he will take our questions and yours. Don't forget about that. That gets started at noon. 314-436-7900. That's how you can call, text this show if you want. If you're streaming us live, which you should be, on Facebook, YouTube, or Twitter, at Chris Amy KMOX, you can leave a comment there. And on the Odyssey app, if you're listening on your phone, you can send us a voice message.
Time now for the top of the order. The top three stories everyone will be talking about.
Concerns about the economy are growing amidst the trade war. Dave Simons is going to join the show, his regular visit on Tuesday. Also, the good news, we had a record-setting box office weekend. Movies are back, baby.
Yes, they are. And I'm glad because watching movies in a theater is just a different experience than watching them in your house.
I had an experience yesterday. I'll tell you about it. Cardinals lost to the Orioles in the start of that series. They'll play today at 5:35. They are in Baltimore. We got the pregame show today at 4:40. So as I mentioned, Brad Young is in with me today. In fact, we're going to talk to Greg Marcus, who is the CEO of the Marcus Corporation. That's the, you know, the theater corporation.
Right. They bought out Werenberg My law firm represented Werenberg for years. And so we assisted in that buyout by Marcus. And I know we'll get into this when we talk to Greg Marcus, but what a great company Marcus is. I love going to the theaters. I basically get a bathtub full of popcorn when I go. I go in and I say, listen, do you have anything bigger than a bathtub? And they say, no, that's as big as we have. So that's what I get.
Do you know what happens to me? And this is, now it didn't happen yesterday. This is the first time it didn't happen in a long time because I didn't get the popcorn. But every single time I go to the theater, I get popcorn because it smells great.
Oh, yeah.
And then
And
I'll get a small bag because I don't like it. Yeah. Then I take it into the theater.
Oh, come on.
I have three bites and I go, why did I get this?
Ugh.
I don't like it enough. I don't like popcorn enough.
Oh, popcorn is my go-to favorite snack. We pop popcorn on the stove at the Young household every Sunday night. I've probably popped enough popcorn to fill up to the arch that high in my house. 660 feet high of popcorn, yes, has come from the Young household.
You have popped enough popcorn that if the arch were to blow over in a tornado, it would break the fall.
Easily. No problem at all.
Who did we talk to last week? It was a meteorologist.
Dave Murray.
Was it Dave Murray? Yeah. Okay. Because we talked to a couple last week after the tornado. And somebody legitimately wanted to know if the arch would blow over in a tornado.
Yeah.
And the answer was they couldn't answer.
Well,
but there were people up there during the storm.
I know, because some
of
the
back and forth, it was, it
sways.
Waving back and forth.
Sure,
yeah.
It sways, and it has to. That's why it won't break. But one of the most iconic pictures from the recent tornadoes came from the arch. Somebody was up there, and you could literally see the funnel cloud itself as it was moving to the northeast, and they took that from the arch.
I have told this already, but I was coming home. I live in the Central West End, and I was getting off the highway onto King's Highway, and it was over the park, and I'm by myself in the car, and I go, that's probably not good. I'm going to turn left. I'm not going home right now. And it got a little dicey. But I know there are people out there who are still hurting and are going to be for a while.
Yes.
We are raising money. KMOX.com in conjunction with Fox 2 and the Red Cross. So this is the link that you want to go to. KMOX.com/Red Cross. Every dollar that is raised is going to stay in the St. Louis area to help the Missouri and Illinois victims of the tornado because it crossed the river. It went into Illinois. So KMOX.com/Red Cross. At last check, Brad, we are at $233,000 committed.
Amazing.
Which is, actually, take that back. It's $234,000 right now. So,
fantastic.
And you know, we're not the only people raising money. So money has been coming in from all angles to different organizations. People really have come to help out here.
Well, it's so critically important because not only was the devastation unbelievable, but so many individuals, I believe the stat I saw was 70% of folks whose homes were hit did not have property insurance coverage. So those folks, I mean, just imagine if your house is wiped out and you don't have insurance, that is devastating. It compounds the devastation by the physical and emotional trauma. Then you have the financial trauma. So these folks definitely need our help.
And I heard one interview, which I have talked about this too, and I'm sure other people have heard it as well, of a woman who, you know, said it was on our list of things to do, get the insurance, but they didn't have the money for it.
Right.
And she said we were doing other, the money was going to things that we needed to do more immediately with the house.
Right.
And then insurance was on the list. Well, for a house that has probably been handed down a couple of generations,
sure,
it's paid for, right? So
right,
you don't have to have insurance like you would if you have a mortgage. So, you know, for a lot of these folks, I don't know what they're going to do unless the community comes out to support, because if you don't have insurance, there's no way to rebuild. And, you know, many people don't have the money to do it. Now, we were talking about, you know, I'm in the Central West End, and there was damage to homes and some significant damage in some areas. But generally speaking, the people who live in my neighborhood, they're okay. They're going to be okay. They have resources.
Sure.
But, you know, you start to go a little bit more north from there, and that story changes. And there are people who really are struggling now. And that's the thing that we have been saying all week, last week. It's in the forefront now. We're thinking about it now, but we're going to have to keep on it. This is going to be one of those things where we have to keep bringing attention to it, because the recovery is not going to be over by the end of the month. It's not going to be over by the end of the summer. This will be a years-long recovery.
Right. And that's counterintuitive, because so much that we deal with on a daily basis, it's a story for a couple of days and then it disappears.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we see that over and over and over again. But this is not a problem that's going to be fixed in a three-day news cycle. It just isn't.
Brad Young, Chris Ranji, let us know what you are thinking today. 314-436-7900. Also, text messages to that phone number there. And then you can leave us voice messages directly from the Odyssey app. Brilliant app. It's the kind of app you should have on your telephone, your cell phone, whatever you want to call it. We were going to talk about cell phones, too, because the iPhone could end up being way more expensive soon.
Yes.
So we will talk about that. I don't have an iPhone, so I don't have to worry about it.
Well, I do, and I love them. I was always an Apple snob because I used to build my own computers, and I was a PC guy, and I thought Apple was for, you know, for artsy, fartsy people who wear...
Graphic designers.
Graphic designers, exactly.
Yep.
And I'm not a graphic designer. Once I went to an iPhone, I'm like, yeah, I'm never going back.
Why?
Oh, because it's so intuitively simple.
Ah.
And I really like that. But iPhones may be very hard to get in the future.
Yeah, we will talk about that. It is a thing to look out for. It is by far the most popular phone in the United States. Around the world, not necessarily so, but here in the U.S., it definitely is. So 314-436-7900, Brad Young and Chris Ranji on 104.1 FM KMOX. If there's one thing I know, it's that Brad Young is addicted to his phone. He's always on it. He's always on Instagram scrolling, looking at stories.
Yeah, that's me, Mr. Social Media.
He's always on TikTok.
Yeah, you know, I don't even have a social media account.
You have zero social media?
Zero, except I have an account on LinkedIn that I never look at. That's it.
Well, I have the exact same thing, too. So
that's
if I ever show up every now and then, there's a message, I go, oh, Sorry.
Oh, yeah. 9 months old when, when I log in to see it.
Was this important? At any rate, Brad Young is in for Amy Marks Kors. And the state of Texas. We've talked a lot on this show when Amy is in, who has very strong opinions about social media, and especially as it pertains to children. And I'm for the most part in line with her on the idea that it is and can be detrimental to children, especially younger kids who are still impressionable, who are still formulating personalities. And we know that it is damaging in the classroom, that it does take attention away, that kids are worried about what's going on the phone. They're worried about social media, maybe not necessarily devoting full attention to learning, which is the whole reason you were there. And,
sure.
And trust me, I get it. I've been in school. I would have loved a distraction like social media because school is boring. I get that, right? But we still can't have it. We still can't have people who are not devoting their attention to learning.
Right.
We're not trying to raise a bunch of idiots here. So the state of Texas is about to take this a step deeper. And there have been efforts like here in the state of Missouri to maybe ban cell phone use throughout the course of the day if a kid is at school. But what Texas is about to do here, Brad, is ban social media for anyone under the age of 18. Still has to go through a Senate vote, and then the governor would have to sign this bill. But as you see it, first of all, let's look at it from a legal perspective.
Right.
Will this be challenged? I imagine it will be by somebody. And how successful will that challenge be?
Yeah, it will immediately be challenged. But here are the issues that the court's going to have to wrestle with. First of all, there is this idea that the youths of America do not have full constitutional privileges under the Constitution. For example, if you're at school, you don't have the freedom of association. You can't say, listen, I really hate this class. I want to go to some other class and hang out with my friends. No, you can't do that. So right association is gone. Freedom of speech, not in school. Freedom of the press, nope. School newspapers, it's been deemed over and over and over again, do not have the same privileges and rights of a regular newspaper. Search and seizure. You got weed in your locker? They can come and search it. Don't need a warrant. So there's so many examples of how kids in our country do not have the same constitutional protections.
Before we go on there,
yeah,
that might be an idea that people don't think about. How did that come to be? Because the Constitution doesn't say anything about adults.
No.
The
way it came to be was under the auspices so many times. I'm not giving this as an example that it's wrong, but Benjamin Franklin, one of the founders of our country, said that that people who are willing to sacrifice liberty for security deserve neither. But what happens is that this idea that kids need our protection, and if they need our protection, then they also need to be protected oftentimes from themselves. And so because of that, First Amendment rights don't apply, Fourth Amendment rights don't apply, and so forth. So that's how that doctrine evolved over time.
And that's well established legally.
Well established. Okay. So when you apply that to this situation, now there's a lot of examples. In fact, there was one case the Supreme Court said you do not shed all of your constitutional principles at the schoolhouse door, but clearly you do shed some of them. And I just gave you a couple of examples of that. But when it comes to this, There's two really main issues. Number one, is it content neutral? And the answer is yes. What do I mean by content neutral? They're not just censoring certain viewpoints. They're not saying, well, if you're on the right, you're okay. If you're on the left, we're going to censor it, or vice versa. So it's a content neutral law. That usually supports the constitutionality of laws that impinge on the First Amendment because there's no censorship of a certain viewpoint. So that will be going in favor of this Texas law. The other side is that if you have a right to free speech, you don't necessarily have the right to the venue of free speech. Meaning, the argument from the government of Texas is going to be, well, we're not stopping you from speaking. You can go out and talk anywhere you want. We're just saying you cannot do that on social media. To the flip side, social media today is the preeminent venue for free speech. Number one, by far. Okay. So the courts are going to have to balance that. Yeah, sure, we're not stopping you from speaking, but if social media is literally the only way you can project out your viewpoint, then stopping that from a kid may be too far over that line.
See, that is really fascinating to me. This whole thing is really interesting to me because, yeah. I guess, first of all, I never really thought of it from the perspective of a kid doesn't have the same sort of constitutional rights that an adult would, because they need to be protected from themselves sometimes. It's just not something that that you normally think about. Now, in terms of whether or not this is a good thing,
That's a whole different question.
It's a completely different question.
It's
I guess, a moral question in some respects. Because I'm not a kid, and I'm thinking of this from myself only, I kind of don't care if they do this. So if it is a thing where kids are no longer able to get on social media, I'm not going to lose my mind over it. Maybe it is probably a good idea to limit their exposure to it.
Right. And I think we do need to care about it. I was just having this conversation with my 22-year-old daughter over the weekend about banning social media for children. And she was telling me that all of the kids her age and slightly older are having this rebound where they're saying social media is now kind of a bad thing.
It's too much.
It's way too much. And yeah, they're realizing that not only is it too much, but it literally rewires your brain.
Yes.
As a kid. And how many times have we seen restaurants where parents just give a phone to their kids in a restaurant
to shut them up
instead of having a conversation with them, instead of engaging with them? And we're seeing now that that is a harmful tool in the hands of a child. I don't think that can be debated at all from the science of it. So it's whether it's legal and whether it's good or bad are literally two completely different questions.
Yeah, and I do think that the research is still, it's not final, but a lot of the research does suggest that it is detrimental to kids,
yes,
to be on social media now, and to be on it for most of the day, which a lot of kids are. I think, and where it gets, for me, I understand this. Kids probably need to do more social human interaction as opposed to being on the phone. And where they will start to push back is if it's, say, you're a kid, right? And you're told you can't be on social media, but all of your friends are, then there's that fear of missing out.
Sure. FOMO.
Which is, that's a real thing. And that I completely understand.
Yes.
But if you tell all of them that none of them can have it, I don't know that you get the pushback.
Yeah, that's a valid point, Chris. It really is, because you are removing that peer pressure out of the equation.
That element's gone.
If all the kids are off social media.
Right.
So I do think that's a healthy thing. I don't know whether it's going to withstand constitutional challenges to this. Overall, if you were to push me and say yes or no, I would probably say yes, it's going to withstand it. Yes, it will be upheld. But it's a very close question.
So if this does happen, and the state of Florida did this last year,
right,
where they signed a bill banning it for kids who are 14 and under, so this would be a higher threshold.
Yes.
If you're 18 or under, you couldn't use it. How many states will follow suit? And how quickly will that start to happen, in your opinion?
Well, in the Florida case, the court sent it back down for more fact-finding and more decision-making. Because keep in mind, at the Supreme Court level, they can only look at evidence that was admitted at the trial. So if there's gaping holes in the record as to how they need the information they need to decide a case, they'll send it back down. So that's what we're seeing with Florida. But to your question, I do see that this would be one of those areas like abortion, where some states are going to say yay and some states are going to say nay. So then you've got the awkward question. If you're a border town, much like St. Louis, your Illinois friends all have social media, but your Missouri friends don't. That could be a problem.
That's Brad Young in for Amy Marks Course today. I'm Chris Ranji. When we come back, the co-founder of Humans of St. Louis It is a nonprofit that shares stories, first-person stories from people all over the city of St. Louis. Lindy Drew is going to join us when we come back on 104.1 FM KMOX. It is the Chris and Amy Show on 104.1 FM KMOX. Amy is out. I got Brad Young with me. I'm Chris Ranji, and it is time to go to the guest line this morning. And Lindy Drew is the co-founder, lead storyteller, and co-author of Humans of St. Louis. It is a nonprofit sharing first-person stories and photographic portraits featuring people and places throughout St. Louis. And we thought, in the aftermath of the tornado, and Lindy actually having spoken to some folks who live on the north side in the aftermath of the tornado, thought Lindy would be really good to talk to today. And we appreciate your time, Lindy. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me on here specifically for what's going on in our city right now.
Can you tell people first about Humans of St. Louis a little bit more and better description than I just gave?
Sure. So my team and I basically go out on the streets with our cameras and we interview strangers and we ask them very open-ended questions in hopes of getting an original story from them that's only happened from them. And then we share it on our platform, which is on Facebook, Instagram, and we just launched on LinkedIn as well. So we're a 501c3. We've been around for a decade. And really the idea is to have a one-on-one conversation with a stranger and then see how far you can take it in a city where there's a lot of divides. But yet once you get out of your car or off your bike or you initiate some kind of conversation, you notice that we're all just alike, and it's a really beautiful thing to have that intimate moment with a stranger, especially in a city like St. Louis.
Lindy, Brad Young here. Why is it why is it important to not only chronicle these stories, but also to record them and to save these stories? Why is that important?
Well, for me personally, I moved to St. Louis like 11 years ago, and I didn't know anything about St. Louis before I got there. I did a search on Google and it talks about sports teams and the weather and like typical things that you might hear from a flyover city as an outsider. But when you actually, you know, make an art piece out of having conversations with folks and then you amplify their voices so more people can tune in and hear what life is like for them, then there's an opportunity for connection there. And the reason we have it on a social media page is so that people can jump into the conversation and maybe they relate to someone or they learn something new about their city that they didn't know before. And that creates community connections and more pride in the area.
Where did you get the idea for this?
Well, Humans of New York has been around for years. Okay. I had never heard of it.
I wondered if this was something in relation to that. Yeah.
It is. So we launched it basically based off of it. And since then, hundreds of human sites have popped up all over the world. And so we're one of many, but we feed it consistently. And the people who started it are myself, along with a couple other social work students from the Brown School. And so we have a social justice lens on the work that we do and the way that we interview and ask permissions and follow up and include people. So every site's really different and who runs it's different. But the way we try to do it is with a lot of heart, and it's been pretty well received by our community, so we keep feeding it.
You talk about being well received, Lindy, but your book has sold out the first run, and you've had to go into a second run on the book. So this is, in fact, being well received, isn't it?
We have. It's been really well received. So we decided a while ago to self-publish because we saw other Humans of Sites had books around the world, and we wanted to put our city on the map too. So we started with a Kickstarter, and then a few years later, we were able to go to print, and we sold out of 2,000 copies in 3 weeks.
Wow.
And so fortunately, from the help of Regional Arts Commission, they backed our second print run. So we were able to order 5,000 copies, and now we have just a little under 2,000 to still get into people's hands.
The website you mentioned, by the way, humansofstl.org, if people want to go there.
Lindy, of all the interviews that you did, what surprised you the most? In other words, as you were talking to folks, you're going to hear a lot of stories of struggles, and you're going to hear stories of hopefully overcoming those struggles. But what surprised you the most?
So when you ask, are you thinking about just in general the storytelling that we do, or the right. storytelling because of current events?
I mean, in terms of someone that you talked to, and it was just, it was completely unexpected story that someone was mm-hmm. telling you.
What really shocks me the most is that every time I approach someone new on the street that I don't know, that I'm just walking with my camera and I walk up to them to say, hello, this is our site, would you mind doing an interview and a photograph? It shocks me that time and time again, so many people say yes. Sometimes they've never heard of Humans of St. Louis before and they're down to try. Sometimes they have heard of it and they'll say, oh man, I don't have a story to tell. I read the types of things that are on your site. But then we try and all of a sudden, it's so poetic what they end up sharing and how they answer these random questions that I'll ask them. So to me, like, that's the best part about the project. And a lot of the times, well, I was going to say, a lot of times we don't have to like publish it. Sometimes it's just the conversation between the storyteller and a stranger to also just promote the city and get to know someone in our city.
It's funny that people are so open to do it. Maybe they're just starving to have real interaction because we're, you know, I mean, yeah, we, in our daily lives, we will have human interactions, but a lot of it is done via phone or, you know, online. And so maybe people are just willing and desperate to talk to somebody face to face and tell their stories.
Yeah. And that's what it is a lot of the times. Like when I finish some of my interviews, people will say, I'm so glad that you approached me today. I didn't realize I had to talk about some of these things, but actually it's really nice that you asked me what you did. So like some of the questions that I ask people are, what's something in your life you've been thinking about changing, but you haven't started yet? Or what's something that you wish you would have said, but you held your mouth shut? Or have you ever experienced a moment of, I don't know what's next here, but I'm not staying here. It's time for movement. And then just from the questions, everyone answers so differently. So if I go out one day and talk to five people, all five answers are just so unique and so genuine.
Lindy Drew with Humans of St. Louis with us on KMOX. And you also recently, after the tornado from about a week and a half ago, you had the chance to go to the Ville neighborhood and speak to some residents there who have lost homes and have been devastated by what happened. You want to tell people about those? And I know you posted the story on Facebook, but just to give people an idea of the conversations you had.
Yeah. So a good friend of mine who is a well-known photographer in the city, Virginia Harold, we are, you know, total proponents of each other's work. And she had expressed interest in hitting the streets with me one day to see what it's like to go out and hostel. So we call it HOSTL, as in Humans of St. Louis. So I invited her out with me, and we had the idea to start closer to South City where we lived, and we drove north. So we started in the Central West End, and we kind of hit both sides of Kings Highway. And as we kept talking to people, they said, but we're fine. We might have a tree that fell down in our yard, or we're cleaning up a bunch of debris, but we're okay. You need to go more north. You need to go more north. And so then we found ourselves in the Makerspace District over like north of Del Mar, and driving through the streets and kind of weaving and just seeing what was going on. It was such a different feel than looking at photos and videos online. So we had talked to some families in both areas. And then the last interview we did is actually the first one that we shared on the site when we started publishing stories about the tornado. And that's when we made it up to the Ville. And we took a turn down a street, and there was a lady by her house just kind of sitting in a couple long chairs. And we thought, let's talk to them. And we did what I normally do, got out of the car with our cameras. We asked if we could come up the stairs. They said yes. We introduced ourselves, we let them know what the project is, and we just said, would you like to share your story? And they did. And the woman who owned the house that you're speaking about, Her name is Miss Stella, and she was outside with a friend and with her niece. And the two of them just launched right into it. And it was so jarring to look at the home behind them as they were telling their story. Miss Stella was in her house when the tornado hit, and she was with her nephew. They made it to the basement and were safe. And when she had come out, she kind of surveyed the house, and the whole top floor was gone, along with lots of photo albums that she said would have been the one thing she would have grabbed if she had enough time. And then she went outside and she saw the houses in her neighborhood leveled as well. And the day that we showed up was just like a day and a half after. And what struck me is that she was so calm, and she had like taken it all in already. And we just wanted to hear from her about what the memories were she had in her home and what were things she could reminisce on. And she started bringing up how she had a garden and she had peach trees outside and beautiful flowers, and it's where she got married. And just visually, the way she was talking, you could almost paint a picture. So in the end, after the interview, we asked to take her photo, and we walked around the house together and did as much of a 360 as we could with all the debris. And then we asked her for permission again if we could share it, and she was like, "Yeah, please do." And what was just wild is, Virginia and I were talking about which story of all the six we got that day should we share. We only spent about 3 hours outside, but we had met so many people and seen so much, and we decided let's start with Miss Stella's. And so the next day we prepared it all. We posted it on the page, and the comments just started flooding in, just flooding in. And I think what was different about what we were doing is that there was a lot of pictures of destruction and a lot of pictures of surveying the area and drone shots, but people hadn't yet started to do those individual one-on-one, like,
Right.
who are you and who's the person behind the home?
Lindy, I can imagine, and please elaborate, but I can imagine that as you were talking to folks, and we know that probably 70% of those who had buildings destroyed or damaged did not have property insurance, but there was a feeling of despair. But I also anticipate that you also found a unique vein of resiliency as well.
Yeah, I mean, of course, we're going to see that throughout. And we try to point that out in all of our interviews too, because the idea of hostel is not to helicopter into a neighborhood, grab someone's story, and then just use it to put on the site for sensation. The idea is to form a connection with someone quickly, to hear the reality of what they're living or what they lived, and then to share that with a wider audience so that, they can kind of have their 15 minutes of fame or whatnot. But also, so people can relate to them, because it's very conversational on the websites. So, I think of the people who are the most vulnerable and willing to do the interviews, that's kind of who we share on the page. And to your point, that's kind of the magic that happens. So, it is really jarring to hear that some people did not have insurance, or just the fact that, like, maybe insurance won't cover their place. Miss Stella and her niece, Marcelle, they spoke about that in their interview, and they were like, "We know how these things go. If there's a glitch or, a loophole, and our insurance isn't covering the damage of the house, that's going to be a problem." It's not really in our nature on our site to do crowdfunding opportunities for people. We kind of figure that if we put the story out there, other folks can step in, and if they see a need, they'll fill it. Well, the interesting thing is, I was surveying what was happening in the comment section, and somebody ended up posting a GoFundMe for them, and they used our photos and they used our story from Stella's words. So I wrote Marcelle, the niece, and was like, "Do you know this person?" And she said, "Lindy, she rolled up on us the same way you did. I don't know her from anyone. She started it for us, but I don't know how it runs." And I was letting them know, the most important thing is that you are the recipient of those funds and you're an administrator on that page. And if you're not, somebody may be taking advantage of you, and like, we need to be careful and look out. So we ended up getting in touch with the lady, and it turns out that the person who did this kind gesture is a previous subject on Humans of St. Louis. I met her 2 years ago. She came in with her mother to tell a story for an opportunity where we invited people to sit down. And when she went back to Stella's house and talked to her and Marcelle, she's like, yeah, I know Hostel well, and I'd love for you guys to benefit from this. So let's put your name on the account. Let's get it started. I have more time now. I was just doing it, you know, in a rushed way. And once we all got on the, you know, on a call together to discuss and it was all, you know, thumbs up, then I added it to her story and they've reached half their goal already. So they've been able to raise $12,500 for Miss Stella and it's still going. And it's so interesting because in this moment with all the destruction and so many people that have been, you know, survivors of what had happened, a lot of people just want to help directly. And I think it's fantastic what organizers and activists are doing to be able to find resources and opportunities to help. And, you know, shout out to For the Culture and Action St. Louis for everything that they're doing and allowing people a space to do that. I think where our comfort zone has always been is one-on-one interviews. And so to be able to share, you know, an individual story, a family story, and then have the audience say, I'd like to help directly. How do I do that? There's a chance to do that with what this young lady, you know, created with her GoFundMe, or now we're adding people's Cash Apps or Venmos directly. And then the subjects are writing me saying, thank you so much. Like, we've collected $700.
That's
or
great.
I don't know where you came from, but we really appreciate the help.
Yeah, on the GoFundMe page is Help Miss Stella Rebuild After St. Louis Tornado. So if you want to search that out, you can. Lindy drew really great work. The book is very good, and good luck in, you know, continuing to pursue it. And if you decide to write another one or make another one, you know, feel free to have the energy to do it, because this is really cool stuff. So I know that it's difficult and a lot of work. Humansofstl.org is the website. Lindy Drew, the co-founder of Humans of St. Louis, we really appreciate you being with us today. Thank you.
You too, Chris and Brad. Thank you so much for having me.
And also don't forget that we are continuing to raise money here at KMOX, kmox.com/Red Cross. All of the money that we raise will stay right here in St. Louis. It's the Chris and Amy Show on 104.1 FM, KMOX.
Now, did you see this? With Chris and Amy.
Brad Young, I don't know if you know that my nightmare is I'm afraid of giant ships, like being up next alongside them.
Yeah.
Like being in a smaller boat next to a really big boat.
You know why that is, don't you?
I have megalophobia.
Yeah. No, it because it makes you feel small.
Yeah.
And because you have such a large ego, you see, it impacts you psychologically because it really displays how small you really are.
I have no ego. I hate myself. I absolutely hate myself. So, yes, I have. It's megalophobia.
Yeah,
that's
a real thing. Yes, it
is. So I have that. A man in Norway woke up on Thursday of last week, and there was a 440-foot cargo ship right, like feet from his house. He has a house on the water.
Goodness.
And this thing ran aground feet from his tiny cabin. This is my nightmare.
Oh,
if I had seen that coming, they believe the pilot of the ship had fallen asleep.
Oh, yeah. You think?
Oh, my God. So if you see the photo of this, that is exactly my nightmare.
Well, that would have come in handy, though. Your nightmare would have come in handy when we had that Mexican naval ship that ran into the bridge.
Yeah.
And people are standing there with their phones, and I'm thinking, get out of the way, you moron. They wouldn't run because they had to get the video on their phones.
Stupid.
It is stupid. Hey, also, did you see this? There's a lawsuit filed to block the Superman movie's release.
What?
Because the estate of Joel Schuster is claiming that it reverted back to his estate in 2017, the rights to Superman. So he's filed a lawsuit to block the release of the movie in multiple countries, including England, Canada, Australia, and so forth. It's not going to happen. It's all about money, but it's a good argument.
He died like 40 years ago.
I know, but he died, though. But there's a 25-year revision
Yeah.
under copyright law. He said it came back to him.
Have you seen the trailer for it?
Oh, I can't wait to see it.
Can't wait. St. Louis and James Gunn has directed this movie. I cannot wait to see it.
His dad was a judge.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Judge Gunn?
Yes.